We don't want to go through the exercise of developing Yira because it's going to be painful. The response to that pain is, yeah, it is painful. But it's a discomfort that wakes you up and makes you feel the thrill of life. Everything counts. You go through to God's keeping score all the time. That's amazing. Constant opportunities. You don't fall asleep anymore. You're always awake. You're always on edge a little bit. You're always thinking, should I be doing more? Could I be doing more? Did I make a mistake? Did I treat that person properly? That sense of pressure is a very good sense of pressure if you handle it the right way. Okay, number two. The second obstacle that we have to working on Yira is we find it limiting. We find it limiting. Meaning if I did walk around always conscious of the consequences, I'm going to feel like I can't do what I want anymore. I gotta get out of bed. I can't say when you're living with a level of Yira, you can't sleep in the morning. God's watching you. From the second you get up, you have no choice. I gotta get out of bed. You can't speak Lashon Hara anymore. You can't judge people anymore. You can't eat food without making a bracha and having the right kavana and thinking about it. You're limited. It really puts you in a trap. You know, it's like when people constantly talk about the difficulty with being religious. Is it turns you into a robot. You become a robot. You become a religious, you become a robot. You wake up in the morning, you got to wash your hands. Then you have to say modami. They have to do this, they have to do that. You come downstairs and you eat breakfast. You have to make brachas. You make brachas before, you make brachas after. Then you daven. You got to go through. You don't make choices in life anymore. You're just going through doing the same routine every day, and you're sort of stuck in a track. So the truth is, we do feel a little bit of a resistance. That if I really understood that there was consequences, I would definitely feel that I don't have a lot of leeway. Like, why is it that I can do what I feel like doing? Because I'm not aware of the fact that God's watching. Right? You watch a person who has no sense of God in their lives. They don't worry about what God's thinking. They don't worry about what's the right thing or the wrong thing. They just do whatever they feel like. I asked the guys in the yeshiva a few weeks ago, before the break, I asked them, I was doing a whole set of classes on Yiras Hashem. So I said, imagine somebody developed a pill that when you take this pill, it gives you a very deep, real feeling of Yira Shamayim. You have such a deep sense of heaven consequences, you're aware of it all the time. You're constantly aware of the consequences of all your actions. Right? Right now, God and world to come is a very, vague idea for us. So this pill will give you an immediate, direct, emotional sense. God's watching you every second. He has expectations of you all the time. And you are filled with this level of Yira. So would you take the pill? So nobody jumped and put up their hand on experience. But the rest of my life, I won't even be able to dream about, doing all those things I like doing. I'm going to be so confined to think like, oh my gosh, I got to stay away from affairs because they're so terrible. Why don't we want to take the pill? And there's a part of us that says, yeah, it makes life easy. Let me take the pill. I'm going to have a lot of Yira. It's a great thing. But there's a part of us that says, that's so limiting. It's so restricting. I'm basically stuck. I like the idea of having a little bit of freedom and doing what I feel like doing. I like cheating once in a while. I like giving myself breaks and not thinking too much about consequences. Right? When we're faced with an Avera, so part of what allows us to do the Avera is we say it right. We're faced in a situation. I'll give you an example. We're in a situation where somebody starts talking to you about somebody that you know. And in the back of your mind, you say to yourself, I think this might be Lashon Hara. They're saying some pretty nasty things. It's about somebody that I know. This is probably Lashon Hara. So we know the halacha is, you can't just sit there and listen to it. You have to either walk away or change the subject or tell them not to say it or do something to just, you can't listen to it. That's the halacha. So why is it that we'll still sit there and listen to the Lashon Hara? Because it's just so uncomfortable to actually say something to the person. It's painful. So the only reason we're willing to avoid that pain of saying something to the person is because we're not realizing the pain we're going to feel by not saying something to the person. So the idea of saying, you know what, every time I'm in a situation where somebody's speaking Lashon Hara, I'm going to have to do something about it, that's uncomfortable. It's so much easier when somebody's speaking Lashon Hara to me to say in the back of my mind, you know what, yeah, is it Lashon Hara? Yeah, well, whatever. I'll worry about it later. It's not so bad. We can allow ourselves to get away with things that we know are wrong because we don't immediately sense the consequences of what we're doing. If we did, we just wouldn't have any choice. Of course you couldn't sit there and listen. You couldn't speak it. You couldn't listen to it. You would be very restricted. So we like having that little blessing. We like having that little bit of leeway in us that allows us to feel like I can do what I want without always having to be worried about what God's thinking all the time. So it kind of, not having Yira is a very liberating kind of feeling. Having Yira, very restricting. what's the positive side of the restriction? Why is it good to feel this limitation? Because really deep down, we know the limitation is good for us. The fact that we feel like doing an avera, the fact that we feel like we can get away with it, we know is a tremendous obstacle for us. We know that it's an obstacle. So really, as much as it's limiting, it's also very empowering. It's very empowering. You're in a situation where somebody's speaking Lashon Hara to you, and you know you should say something about it or change the conversation, but you just feel a little bit too embarrassed to do anything about it. So Yira gives you the power. It's not limiting, it's empowering. It gives you the power to say, you know what, I'm a lot more scared about what God thinks of me than I am about what this person thinks of me. Of course I'm going to say something. Of course I'll try and change the subject. Of course I'll walk away. I got to do something. Rosh Yeshiva says it like this. He says, when you look at a situation where there's Yivi Yetzer Hara that you don't want to confront, you're too embarrassed, you're too lazy, you're too insecure, you're too whatever, you're too confused. When you have a Yetzer Hara that you don't want to confront, he says, it's like you're faced with a vicious dog in front of you. I don't want to go there. It's going to hurt. It's going to be uncomfortable. I don't want to do that thing. I don't want to commit to doing that mitzvah. It's scary. Something might happen to me. I don't want to face that Yetzer Hara. So he says, how do you have the strength to face that Yetzer Hara of this vicious dog that's barking at you? By looking behind you and realizing that Hashem is there. That's like a lion running at you. I'm not scared of a dog in front of you. I'm worried about a lion behind me. I'm just going to run, and I don't care about that dog. Of course I'll do the right thing. Yeah, it's going to hurt. Yeah, it's going to be uncomfortable. I'm not used to it. But of course, I'm much more concerned about Hashem giving me a good life and giving me what I need than I am about facing some Yetzer Hara. Of course it's uncomfortable to make changes. But if we can push ourselves to do it by realizing we're going to get so much more out of life, so you realize that developing the sense of Yira is empowering rather than limiting. I'd rather not think about the whole equation. I don't want to think about the dog in front of me. I don't want to think about the line behind me. I want to have a good time and not think about anything. That's the most comfortable way to go through. But once you realize there really are Yetzer Haras that I should be breaking, so where am I going to get the strength to break them? They're scary. I don't want to make those changes. So feeling the consequences, the positive consequences of making a breakthrough on a Yetzer Hara, the negative consequences of not making a breakthrough when it comes to an avera, that's what pushes you through. It gives you the power to overcome whatever you need to. Okay. I mean, I'll give you like just on a simple level, on the simplest level, you look at any personal limitation that you feel in life right now, any Yetzer Hara that you know that you haven't overcome. But this is I'm giving a different exercise, a much more down to earth exercise. You look at any Yetzer Hara that you know that you haven't overcome, and you realize, if I overcome this Yetzer Hara, if I make this one change in life that's very difficult, what's my life going to turn out to be like? If I can make this one breakthrough in this one area that I feel very limited in right now, what's it going to turn? How's my life going to turn out? And if I don't make the change, how's my life going to turn out? I'm walking into Rosh Hashanah now saying, Hashem, I want to have a great year, and I want this, and I want that, I want to make these changes, I want to have a home. That's great, it sounds very nice. But if I know that a year from now, I'm going to look back and realize I didn't really do anything about it. And 2 years from now, and 3 years from now, and 4 years from now, if I said I could show you a video of you 10 years from now, I have a videotape of you 10 years from now. So you're looking at this video. Very nice. You got married, you had children, settled down, nice family, living in a nice community. And you look at yourself and say, Baruch Hashem, looks great. Everything looks great. Okay, a little bit older looking, but okay, not so bad. I'm still all right. Right? Got my kids, got my family, got a wonderful husband and a beautiful home, and I live in a nice community. And then when you really begin to look closely at the videotape, you look at yourself, there you are in the kitchen, and there you are with your kids, and there you are with your husband, and there you are with your friends, and you're this, and you're that. You look at yourself and you say, oh my gosh, I'm really the exact same person. Nothing's really changed. I got the same hang-ups, I got the same bad habits, I've got the same bad mitos. I've got the same insecurities. I still treat people the same way. Okay, I'm not an idiot anymore. Now I'm married, and I've got a family, and I'm living in a nice house. That's good. That part's changed. But really, nothing's changed. So that, do we want to have that 10 years from now? That's scary. I want to make changes. I want it 10 years from now, 20 years from now, 30 years from now. The same stick over and over. The same stupidities, the same insecurities, the same confusions over and over and over. We know we don't want to be there. So just realizing the consequences in this world of me not making a breakthrough and really trying to change, that's a scary consequence. I don't want that. I want to see a picture of me 10 years from now where all of these stupidities that are in me, I just broke through them and got them out of me. How am I going to do that? by realizing that, you know, that feeling of, oh my gosh, I don't want to be living that same life with the same stupidities I'm living with right now. That's an example of consequences. That's an example of consequences in this world. The exercise I gave you was more of a, from last week, that was more of consequences in the world to come. How many people do we know that seriously, on a daily basis, try and really make changes in life? We get inspired once in a while because we go to a class, or we hear this, or we meet somebody that made a change. You meet somebody that lost 50 pounds. You meet somebody that really made a major change in life. Say, wow, that's great. I'm going to do that also. I'm also going to make a major change. I'm also going to try and improve myself. I'm also going to overcome this bad habit. You wake up the next morning and you forget about it. Right? So the whole idea of Yira is it's the ability to constantly focus on those consequences. I always want to be plugged in. I always want to be awake to realize that I got things I could be working on. If we don't consistently work on it, we don't get anywhere. If we wait for somebody to inspire us to make the change, you know, the inspiration will last for about 12 hours at best. And then we're just back to where we were before. So yeah, most people most of the time don't go through major changes. We go through superficial changes, but nothing, you know, unless something shocking happens to us. And we don't take the time otherwise, we're just going to go through doing the same thing over and over. All right, so Rosh Hashanah, the whole time period we're in right now is, realize you can mamash make changes, but it's totally in your hands. It's not going to happen if you don't make the choice to do it. Third idea, the third obstacle, and then we'll move on to the next level altogether. Third obstacle to working on Yira is that it seems very demeaning. It seems very demeaning to us that the thing that's going to motivate us to do the right thing, and the thing that will motivate us to avoid the wrong thing, is fear of consequences. It's demeaning. It sounds kind of lowly for a person to say, you know, the only reason I really get out of bed in the morning is because I know God's going to get me if I don't. You know, the only reason I don't speak Lashon Hara is because I know there's consequences, so I better watch what I'm saying, because if I don't watch what I'm saying, then, you know, I'm going to face the consequences in the world to come. It's very lowly. And the truth is, the Gemara says that it's lowly. The Gemara says it's a very lowly way to serve Hashem if you're serving Hashem totally just based on fear of consequences. Right? A person who says, I give money to tzedakah only because God's going to pay me back, double. Right? I keep Shabbos because it's going to give me a great olam haba. I daven every day because that way God's going to treat me nicely. It's a very selfish, lowly way of approaching your connection to Hashem. You know, you're doing it purely for yourself. You don't really care about the relationship. You're really just doing it because of you. It's a very lowly way of serving Hashem. So why do we focus on it all together? You know, obviously we'd say a person who keeps Shabbos because they really feel connected to Hashem. If you're doing something out of a positive motivation, it's obviously much nicer. A person who says, you know, I keep Shabbos because I really want to feel connected to Hashem. It's a taste of the world to come. It's an opportunity to connect on a different level. I daven because it's developing a relationship. A person who's able to see mitzvahs as a positive relationship with Hashem that they're developing is much higher than a person who says, I'm just doing it because I'm scared of the consequences. There's no question about it. At the same time, if there's a mitzvah that we're not doing, or there's an avera that we're not avoiding, it's probably because we're not holding at least on that lower level. If there's something that's holding me back in my own growth in Judaism, in a mitzvah or an avera, chances are the area that I should work on to become more motivated is on this lower level. If you can daven because you like davening and you're into it and it's a spiritual exercise, great. You don't have to focus on the fact that God's going to reward you. If you do chesed because you really care about people and it makes you feel good and you feel like it's a good experience and you look forward to it, so great. You don't need to be told God's going to reward you in heaven for all the chesed that you did. You don't need to know it. It's irrelevant to you. You're doing it anyway. That's very good. That's definitely a higher level. But when you don't do the chesed, or you're not so careful about keeping Shabbos, or about davening, or about Lashon Hara, or about giving tzedakah, or about making brachas, if you're not so careful about it, and you know you should be more careful, you know this is an area of a weakness that you want to work on. So this whole idea of fear of consequences is definitely a way to motivate yourself. Like I said, just realize what's going to happen if you don't. Realize how much a better life can be if you're willing to push yourself and really overcome these limitations. Tell you, this lower level is focused on the consequences I'm going to experience, positive and negative. The higher level is, I don't even care about consequences. I'm developing a relationship with Hashem. Right? I'm doing chesed because I appreciate doing chesed. I'm doing chesed because I find it to be spiritually uplifting. I'm doing chesed because I really care about people. The lower level is, I'm doing chesed because God says it's a mitzvah and I'm going to get a reward in heaven because I did chesed. So the lower level is really self-serving. And the higher level is really much more about building yourself as a person and building your relationship with Hashem. You're doing it because you appreciate the goodness of what you're doing. You're avoiding the Avera, right? You see a burning building, and Chas V'Shalom is a burning building, and there's a kid crying in the window, and you run in to save the kid. You're not doing it because you're going to get a reward. You're not thinking, I wonder if their parents are rich. Should I go in and save that kid? It's so obviously just the right thing to do. You do it. You don't think about consequences. That's the higher level. Lower level is, I'm making calculations. Is it worth it to me? What are the consequences? Should I push myself? Shouldn't I push myself? You're really just focused on yourself. You're not focused on the goodness of what you're doing. And that's really the difference between all of us. So with those three, with understanding those three things, that's really why we have a difficulty doing the exercise. We find it limiting, we find it demeaning, we think it's not going to be empowering, we don't want to feel this pressure all the time. We want to relax and take it easy. So this whole time of year, Elul, Yamim Noraim, coming into the days of awe, the whole period of the year we're going into now is really to develop this sense. To be able to walk around realizing what I do really counts. It's worth pushing myself. It's worth trying to make a breakthrough, even if it's going to be uncomfortable. Because I recognize there's a lot at stake. There's a lot at stake positively if I'm willing to really push myself. There's a lot at stake negatively if I don't seize the opportunity. It's going to keep running through the same cycles over and over. So all of that we've said so far is Yiras HaOnesh. Now ready to move on? One level up? Okay. The higher level is what's called in Hebrew Yirat HaRomamut. Yiras HaRomamus.
HaRomamut?
Romimus. Resh Vav Mem. Mem Vav Tav. Romimut. Resh Vav Mem. Mem Vav Tav. Yiras HaRomamus. When we talk about this higher level called Yiras HaRomamus, at this level already we wouldn't translate Yira as fear. We would translate Yira as awe. Being in awe, right? We call Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur the days of awe. Something awesome. Not awesome like, not like California, that's awesome. But awesome like it could, something that breeds awe. There's no fun of people from California. Something that breeds a sense of awe. So Yiras HaRomamus would probably be translated as being in awe of God's greatness. Bless you. That's the way I would translate it. Having awe of God's greatness. This is already a whole different level. We're not talking about fear. We're not talking about consequences. What are we talking about? We're talking about appreciating who Hashem really is. And where Hashem really is. I'll give you just one example. The example that always comes to mind when I think about Yiras HaRomamus is I was teaching a class here at IAD a couple of years ago. We were doing a series of classes on tefillah. We're talking about tefillah. So, bless you. I was going through the whole idea of a bracha. So I said, whatever, the first couple of times just on bracha. So I said, when you say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam, so what are we supposed to realize? When you're making a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, so what are you saying? We normally think that when we're making a blessing, we're trying to recall the blessing that God gave us, right? Make a bracha on a cup of coffee, make a bracha on an apple. You're recalling the blessing that God put into the world by giving you this apple. Baruch Atah Hashem. So I said, it's really an idea from the Nefesh HaChaim, one of the Kabbalists. He says, when you say Baruch Atah Hashem, he says you have to realize you're not making a blessing about God. The blessing is not about God. The blessing is you talking to God. The word Atah is you. You're talking in second person. You're talking directly to God. When you say Baruch Atah Hashem, you're saying you, God, are the source of blessing. Not God is the source of blessing. You, God, are the source of blessing. Right? If we just said Baruch Hashem Melech Olam, Elokeinu Melech Olam, you'd be making a blessing about God. When you say Baruch Atah Hashem, you're literally talking to God Himself. You're addressing the Creator of the universe. So I met this point in class. There was a girl, I don't remember who it was now, it was like 3-4 years ago, I think. This one girl puts up her hand and she says, do you mean that when you're making a blessing and you say you're talking to Hashem, you mean like Hashem is actually here right now and we're talking to Him? So I said, yeah. So she says, that's kind of heavy. And I thought about it for a second, I said, you're right. It is kind of heavy. Every once in a while it just hits you. Like, you know, we spend all day learning about God. We talk about God like, you know, he's up on some planet somewhere asleep right now, not really paying attention. And we think that when we're davening, it's like you're writing a letter, and the letter goes in the mail, and one day God's going to read that letter, right? It goes by express mail, so maybe in 10 minutes he'll be reading the letter. He's not reading a letter. You're mamash talking directly to the creator of the universe. He's in front of you at every moment, all day, 24 hours a day. That is a heavy idea. It's not fear of consequence. You're not thinking about what's going to happen to me one day if I don't listen to him. You're not thinking about consequences. You're feeling the fact that Hashem is here all the time, and you're sensing Hashem's presence. That's the idea of Yiras HaRamamos. You don't walk around feeling like God is this abstract force up there, out there somewhere on some planet watching you with a telescope. Hashem is with us every moment, all the time. I'm sure the Rebbetzin talks about this all the time. This is a very, very fundamental idea. This is the level where the idea of Yira really becomes a constant mitzvah. Constant mitzvah. On some level, we should always walk around having the sense of knowing we're in Hashem's presence. The first mitzvah that the Shulchan Aruch brings, right at the very beginning of Shulchan Aruch, anybody know what the first halacha is? Nope, doesn't start with the Ten Commandments.
What? No, there's a God.
It gets into that. The very first thing it says a person has to strengthen themselves to get out of bed like a lion. Greet the day like a lion. You got to get up a bed, get out of bed. You got to jump out of bed, basically. Your eyes, whatever, the alarm bells, the alarm rings, you wake up, you say, God's here. The day's starting. Let's go. Let's go do what we got to do. So he explains, right, the commentary is explained right there on that spot. First of all, that's exactly where the Mishnah Berurah starts talking about six constant mitzvahs, always being aware of Hashem on all these different levels, loving Hashem and fearing Hashem, being aware of Hashem. So he makes the point over there, he says, the ideal is that we should always conduct ourselves. This is how he explains the idea. We should always conduct ourselves with the realization that we're in Hashem's presence. He says, and this is really where it ties into Rosh Hashanah. He says, you know that the way you act when you're in the presence of an important person, that talks about a king. We don't even know what kings are these days. But you know when you're in the presence of an important person, you will get dressed differently, you'll eat differently, your mannerisms will be different, the way you talk to people will be different. Everything changes. When you're in the presence of somebody important, your whole mannerism changes. Your whole sense of behavior changes. Right now, we're having this class. If right now, at this minute, the Rebbetzin walked in the room, every one of you would, you know, straighten up a little bit. And, you know, it's not like you're doing anything wrong right now, but the Rebbetzin is here. Right? Then that's a great thing. Because what it really means is you realize, I care what the Rebbetzin thinks of me. I'm a little extra conscious when I know the Rebbetzin is in the room. Every once in a while, the Rebbetzin drops in when I'm teaching. And I can tell right away there's like a certain tension in the class. Everyone's, you know, a little extra careful, a little extra nice, a little extra attentive, because the Rebbetzin is here. So if that's the way you feel about the Rebbetzin, how do you feel when God is in the room? That's what the Mishnah Berurah says, the first halacha. If I can always have that sense of knowing Hashem is around, it will change everything about what I do. If you go back to your dorm at night, or whatever you have, your apartment, whatever your living arrangement is, when you go back to your own apartment, let's say you have a roommate, you go back and you see that there's nobody around. So you walk in that, you walk in the room, you close the door, you sit down with your computer or you read a book, whatever you're doing. So you walk in the room and you feel like, okay, I'm alone, there's nobody around, I can, whatever. For the next couple of hours, I can basically just do whatever I want. I got my free time, I got my chores, whatever I'm working on. The minute your roommate walks in the room, you feel a little tense. I gotta be a little extra careful. I can't act exactly the way I would have acted when she wasn't here. I can't just think or behave the way I would have normally behaved. She's a close friend. I'm not worried about her. I'm not worried about her giving me dirty looks. But still, the fact that somebody else is watching me will always give me a certain level of pressure. Is somebody watching? If there's nobody in the room, I can pick my nose. My roommate's in the room, I'm not going to pick my nose. I'll get a tissue instead. There's somebody watching. I care about what people think of me. So that idea of knowing Hashem is always watching means that even when nobody's around, there is a constant level of self-respect that I have for myself, because I know I'm always being watched. It's not fear of consequence. I'm not worried about God striking me down because I did something wrong. It's not what we're talking about. But But the awareness that Hashem is around all the time gives me a certain sense of responsibility for myself in terms of how I act and how I think and how I talk. There's a famous Gemara, just one more point here. Famous Gemara, Rav Yochanan. The Gemara says that by Rav Yochanan, when he was passing away right before his death, his Talmidim were gathered around his bed, his students, and the students asked him to give them a blessing. So the blessing he gave them was, you should have as much fear of Hashem. Not fear. You should have as much, we're talking about this level of Yirsa, you should have as much Yira of Hashem as you have Yira of other people. You should be at least as conscious of God's presence as you are of other people's presence. That's really what it means. So what did the Talmidim say? That's your bracha. It's not much of a bracha. You're telling us we should have just the level of being conscious of Hashem's presence as much as we are of other people's presence. That's it. That's what they said back to him. That's it. So he says to them, if you can have that level, that's already very good. If you could be on a level where you're always aware of Hashem's presence, the way you would be if somebody else being around, you have a certain self-consciousness because you know you're being watched. That's fantastic. It's a high level to reach. It's not the easiest thing to do. So I remember, I just had this about 2 years ago now. 2 years ago, I don't know where this came from. You know what it was? I was teaching a class on six constant mitzvahs to the guys in the yeshiva. So whatever, it was on my mind quite a bit, just thinking through what I was teaching and the ideas, giving out my own examples. So one night, I was leaving my neighborhood to drive somewhere. It was like 11 o'clock at night. I had to drive to Beit Shemesh, visit a friend. So I get in the car. I'm all by myself. It's 11 o'clock. So I thought to myself, this is a perfect time for me to really just put on my favorite music, 45-minute drive, just enjoy myself. So I brought a couple of tapes with me, put the tape on. I was about to listen to the music, and just as I'm pulling out of the neighborhood, I see there was a guy there hitchhiking. One of my neighbors was hitchhiking. Not, I don't know the guy very well, but some guy that lives in my neighborhood was hitchhiking. So I thought, you know, it's obviously the right thing to do. I'll pick the guy up. But at the same time, I can't, you know, I'm listening to Miles Davis. The guy probably doesn't like listening to Miles Davis. I'll turn off the music, and I'll sing Sketches of Spain. It's fantastic album. I'll talk to him instead of listening to the music. So he gets, you know, I turn off the tape. He sits down in the car. We schmooze. You need for about 15 minutes, I'm taking him to, or whatever, to Ramada School. So we drive through. I drop him off for Ramada School. Drop him off. And I say, okay, good night. Have a nice evening. I'm thinking to myself, great, I'm alone again, I'm back in the car, I can finally listen to my Miles Davis tape. And just as I'm about to put on the tape, I don't know where this thought came from. I just had this thought in my head. I said, wait a second. What does it mean I'm alone and nobody's around, I can listen to Miles Davis? Hashem is in the car. Hashem is in the car. So instead of some guy,
He likes Miles Davis.
But when God's in, you know, okay, so there's nobody left in the passenger seat. But God's in the passenger seat. How could I spend the next half an hour driving to Beit Shemesh, listening to music, and ignoring God? I would never do it to another pure son and say, listen, shut up and don't talk to me because I'm listening to my music right now. That's horrible. You'd never do that. It's a human being. He needs a little respect. You have to give him some attention. So talk to the guy. So what am I going to say? I'm going to drive for the next half an hour listening to music and ignoring the fact that God is in the car with me? So, I don't know where this came from. This thought just popped into my head. I said, if God's in the car, I got to talk to God. So I didn't put on the music, and I spent the entire half an hour driving to Beit Shemesh talking to God. Out loud. Man, I had a cell phone in the car, so yeah. I just thought I was talking on the cell phone. I didn't look too crazy. But it was the strangest experience. It felt, for the first couple of minutes, it felt very, very weird. I feel like a total weirdo. I'm just like talking to God. But then I realized as I was doing it and I was getting comfortable with it, I should be doing this all the time. God's always around. Why? You talk to God only when it's time to daven. When it's time for mincha, God pops down and now you can talk to him. God's around 24 hours a day. How could you ever ignore God? So I gave the guys in the yeshiva the next day, I told them what happened to me. I gave them the exercise, and for days and days I was bugging them to do it. Nobody wanted to do it. I told them, I say, all you have to do is find 2 minutes where nobody's around. Don't do it when anybody's around because you're going to be way too self-conscious. Go into the elevator, jam it between two floors for a couple minutes, and just spend 2 minutes talking to God. Or go for a walk, go around behind the corner of the building, go to the roof of the yeshiva, go somewhere where nobody's around, where you feel totally alone, you don't feel self-conscious at all, and spend 2 minutes talking to God. It took days and days of me harassing the guys until they actually got around to doing it. Now, interestingly enough, a week later, I was teaching a group of women in the robe of Kollel wives, and I gave them the same exercise, they did it in a minute. So what's the difference? So most of the women told me, they said, we do it all the time anyway. Yeah. You talk to God, you know, of course you talk to God. God's always around. You're home alone in the kitchen. Of course you're going to talk to God. It's a natural thing. You know, for guys, it's much harder than it is for women. For some reason, whether it's men's psychology, women's psychology, feeling of independence, ego, whatever the reason is, women are more attuned to it than men are. But if you take the time to do it as a verbal exercise, right? Part of the reason there's a halakha that when you daven, you're supposed to daven and verbalize what you're saying, is because that's what helps us take seriously the idea that you're really talking to Hashem. If we think for ourselves, davening is just, I'll just think the ideas and Hashem can read my mind, we don't really look at that as a form of communication. I don't communicate with anybody else that way. I can't tell my parents, you know, read my mind. I can't tell my friend, like, you know what I'm thinking, so, you know, do what I'm asking. You got to communicate. You got to say what's on your mind. You got to verbalize it. The halakha that says you should verbalize your prayers, you should hear what you're saying, is going to help you take the idea of tefillah more seriously. So when you go through the exercise, 2-minute exercise of just talking to God out loud, davka doing it out loud, it gives you a much more immediate sense of the fact that you really are in Hashem's presence. And that's the beginning of being conscious of the fact that He's always around. And again, just to answer your question from before, I found that when I did that on a regular basis, and it's become like a routine for me now to do it, it means in the morning I get up and right away I sense it much more easily. I did this exercise for about a year, less. I think I did it for about 6 or 8 months consistently. I tried every day for one period of time to just talk to God out loud. Whatever's on my mind, you know, complain, kvetch, you know, say thank you, say this, say it. Whatever's on my mind, doesn't have to be anything formal, doesn't have to be Hebrew, just say whatever's on your mind. I found that by doing it for about 6 months, it came to a point where basically every time now that I'm by myself, right? I'm talking to a group of students in the yeshiva and I get to the elevator. And there's nobody around. As soon as the elevator doors close, without me having to think about it, the elevator doors close and I think, ah, God's with me again. I can't think about when other people are around, but it totally happens to me when I'm by myself now. I walk into the room, there's nobody around, I feel that God is there. It's not a psychological trick. God is there. It's just easier to tune into it when you're not conscious of other people being aware of it. The mitzvah of Yira is much more when you do it out loud, because that's when you mamash feel like Hashem is... Writing in a journal is almost like writing a letter. It's a good thing to do. But talking out loud, especially if you feel a resistance to it because it feels weird, it means when you do it, you're going to find it very empowering. In our normal day-to-day human experience, communication means you talk out loud to somebody. That's the way, you know, if somebody else is in the room, I want to say something to them, I'll say it out loud. That's the only way they're going to hear what I have to say. So if you can do that with God, it makes you take much more seriously the fact that God is really there. Even just for a minute, just to do it, you know, once a day for a couple of minutes to talk out loud, and it gives you that sense of, I'm taking it much more seriously, it's tremendous. For myself personally, it mamash made a tremendous change for me. For somebody who says they find writing to Hashem more natural, and they find talking to Hashem more unnatural, it's more uncomfortable, then dafka talking to Hashem is the thing to do. So whatever, try both. But I would say that the general rule would be the one that's more difficult is more the sign that that's the weakness where I'm having a difficulty with seeing that Hashem is really around. Generally, communication is much more a sign. Like, speaking is usually more a sign of taking a person's presence seriously. Somebody doesn't have to be in the room with me for me to write them a letter. I can write them a letter. They could be living in the other end of the world. They'll get it in a couple of weeks. That's not a sign of them being present with me right now. Talking to somebody is a sign that they're present.
But when you overcome something that's harder for you, it becomes more special.
For sure. That's what I'm saying. Focus on the one that's more difficult. Okay, I actually wanted to get into another couple points, but we're out of time. I'll just end by saying this. If you can find one area, in everything that we've said, if you can find one specific area that you feel for yourself would be the thing that would give you that breakthrough in terms of mitzvahs, in terms of taking a step forward, in terms of developing your relationship with Hashem, and that's the one thing that you really feel is going to be a breakthrough for you, that's the thing to spend the time thinking about now, that when you come into Rosh Hashanah, that's the one thing that you're committing to. The danger we all have when it comes to Rosh Hashanah is it's such an unbelievably powerful day, and there's so much going on, and it's a whole new year, and it's the recreation of man, and it's blowing the shofar and reconnecting to God, coordinating with God as the King. The biggest temptation we have is we make huge commitments to ourselves to make huge changes, and they don't last. So with not just from my class, with everything that you hear, building from Rosh Hashanah, you want to keep coming back to one point that you feel you can really make a difference in. If you come into Rosh Hashanah saying, this is one change that I'm going to start to make, and I know that if I make this one change, then when I see this video of me 10 years from now, it's going to be a different video. It's going to be a video that I'm happy with, because I really took myself seriously and made the changes I knew I could.